the headlines, Iran unveils a new long-range ballistic missile with radar evasion capability.
The missile has a range of 2,000 kilometers and a warhead which has high explosive power. The missile is capable to carry various warheads.
Israeli forces have carried out a fresh violent raid on a refugee camp near the occupied West Bank city of Jericho, wounding over a dozen Palestinians. And the UN chief warns the Horn of Africa is in dire need of help as the world body pledges $2.4 billion in humanitarian assistance for the region. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran has unveiled a new fourth-generation ballistic missile on the anniversary of the liberation of the city of Khorramshahr during Iraq's imposed war on the Islamic Republic. Iran's defense ministry says the missile's high-tech engine is operated with liquid fuel. The velocity is 8 Mach in air and 16 in outer space. The new missile can be guided in mid-flight, which contributes to its precision. Iran's defense minister said in the unveiling ceremony that the new missile is capable of carrying various warheads.
The missile has a range of 2,000 kilometers and a warhead which has high explosive power. The missile is capable to carry various warheads.
The Iranian general said a principal feature of the missile is its radar evasion capability. Iran has developed its homegrown missile capabilities over the past 2 years, In 2022, the Islamic Republic unveiled a number of missiles, including a hypersonic one. Iran's foreign minister has underscored the need for the formation of an inclusive government in Afghanistan. Hossein Amir Abdollahian said Tehran does not recognize the Taliban as a, quote, legitimate ruler. The Iranian minister said Iran is dissatisfied that an inclusive government has not been created yet. Tehran has raised the concern with Taliban officials. The minister also touched on Iran's dispute with Afghanistan over shared water resources. He said that Tehran has told the Taliban that political statements are not enough to settle differences. The Iranian minister said necessary measures under a 1970s agreement between Iran and Afghanistan need to be taken. The minister said Iran believes diplomatic engagement is the only effective option. He said that Tehran seeks to help promote peace in Afghanistan, and it expects Afghan officials to reciprocate. Israeli troops have rampaged through a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. They raided over 50 homes, firing shots at people and lobbing toxic canisters at residents. Our panel at the News Review program discusses the matter.
On this segment of the program, Israeli forces have carried out a fresh violent raid on the occupied West Bank, targeting a refugee camp in the southern city of Jericho. The regime's forces stormed the Arabat Jaber camp from several directions, firing bullets and toxic gas bombs at Palestinians. They raided more than 50 homes, including those of the governor of Jericho and the Jordan Valley Jihad Abu al-Assal and his sons. Over a dozen Palestinians were wounded in the assault, with at least one is said to be in critical condition. Israeli forces also detained 14 people. They prevented locals from entering or leaving, and even denied ambulances from reaching the scene. The Israeli regime has intensified its raids across the occupied territories. In recent months, nearly 150 Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli attacks in the West Bank alone this year so far. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Sandos Al-Assad, journalist and human rights advocate, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Also, we have editor-in-chief of Sira Press, Ali Salam, joining us from Moscow. Welcome to the program, to the both of you. Let's cross over to our guest in Moscow, Ali Salam. There's been an uptick in the Israeli aggression and violence against Palestinians, specifically what we're seeing since the start of this year. Talk to us about the Israeli aggression, and what do you think are the motives behind this increase of violence?
Well, the Israeli aggression has been happening since the inception of the Zionist entity. It's not anything new. It's not something that depends on whether the Palestinians defend themselves via means of armed resistance or they sit back and do nothing. The goal of the Zionist entity has just been genocide of what they deem as inferior peoples in order to take their land and establish an outpost in West Asia in order to further expand and establish a political hegemony in the region. But in particularly, the Palestinian people have taken it upon themselves to exercise their natural and legal right to armed resistance. And so this is something that the Zionist entity fears, and this is something that they've been cracking down upon. And this armed resistance has been existing mostly in Gaza for many years, but it has almost miraculously sprung up in the West Bank, maybe only for a few years. So it's been something that's been very heroic and has caught the Zionist security establishment by surprise. And it is something that has brought the Zionist security establishment practically to its knees, and it is causing many further weaknesses and fractures within the Zionist entity. And they're desperate to try to snuff out this resistance, but the more and more that they try, the more and more that they fail.
All right, let's cross over to Sundos al-Assad, who's joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Ms. al-Assad, if you're with us, I want to get your thoughts on the increase of Israeli violence and aggression that we're seeing against Palestinians. Our guest in Moscow, Ali Salam, was speaking about the reprisal attacks and the retaliatory operations that we're seeing against Israelis coming from Palestinians. How significant are those?
What's going on Palestine is part of parcel of the Israeli hostility against the Palestinians and against the entire people of our region. The ongoing crimes and atrocities that are being committed by the Zionist occupation gives the Palestinians the legitimate right to resist this temporary occupation, and gives the entire resistance in the region this right that this regime is an odd regime in our region, and we have the right to resist it and resist its hostilities. And this regime couldn't have committed these crimes without the green light given by the Western government, especially the American administration. We haven't seen that the UN and the other international bodies taking effective measures to put a stop for these crimes and for these atrocities. And unfortunately, at the same time, we see that that some Persian Gulf monarchs are normalizing ties in order, which is another green light for this occupation, to shed the blood of the innocent Palestinians and to demolish their house and to loot their lands.
Ali Salam, one thing that we're seeing in the face of the Israeli crimes that are continuing against the Palestinians on a day-to-day basis is the silence of the international community. I want you to explain that inaction coming from international bodies such as the United Nations, such as OIC, such as the Arab League and other Arab governments. And the question is, how can the status quo ever change given the unequivocal support that the Israelis receive from the United States?
The United Nations may as well be called the useless nations, because it's essentially a smiley face cover-up for American imperialism and the Zionist occupation. Whatever toothless letters that they write against some aspects of Israeli crimes is totally and totally insufficient for the gravity of the, let's be honest, genocide that is happening against the Palestinian people. That includes also various NGOs. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz once reported that Amnesty International was an official front of the Israeli foreign ministry in the 1970s. And if we see their record in supporting regime change against the biggest supporters of Palestine, such as Syria and Iran, with many of their fake news and dubious reports about alleged human rights abuses in those countries, we can see that they still serve the Zionist agenda and the American agenda until today.
Thank my guests, Sandos Al-Assad, journalist and human rights advocate, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And thanks to Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press, joining us from the Russian capital, Moscow. And with that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the Newsroom.
The UN chief has warned that the Horn of Africa is in dire need of help as the world body pledges $2.4 billion in humanitarian assistance for the region.
We must act now to prevent crises from turning into catastrophe. Make no mistake, action will make all the difference. Last year, thanks to generous support from donor countries, we delivered life-saving assistance to 20 million people, and we helped avert a famine. Now support must match the scale of the challenge.
The sum raised by the UN is considerably less than the $7 billion that it says is needed to prevent a worst-case scenario in the Horn of Africa. According to the UN, crises brought on by drought, displacement, and famine have put the lives of 43 million people in danger. People across Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya are in urgent need of life-saving support, while the UN chief says fighting in Sudan is radiating instability across the region. UN officials blame climate change for drought and growing hunger-related deaths in Africa. Moscow signed a deal with Minsk to station tactical nuclear weapons in the Belarusian territory amid rising tensions with the West. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said the move was driven by an escalation of threats on Russia's western borders with Belarus. The deployment was first announced by President Vladimir Putin in March. Moscow has said such weapons would be deployed, quote, right at NATO's threshold. Belarus borders NATO's eastern flank, comprising of Lithuania, Latvia, and Poland. The U.S., as well as Kiev's other allies, have expressed concern about the Russian move. Tactical nuclear weapons refer to those used for specific gains on the battlefield, rather than those with the capacity to wipe out cities. Russia has to expel 5 Swedish diplomats in what it said was a retaliatory measure for Sweden's, quote, confrontational course in relations. The Russian Foreign Ministry said that it was responding to the expulsion of 5 of its diplomatic staff from Sweden last month. Moscow said the expulsion of its diplomats was a, quote, openly hostile step by the Swedish government. The Foreign Ministry said ties with Sweden have reached a, quote, unprecedented low. Relations between the two countries have worsened since 2022, when Sweden announced its intention to join NATO. It came in the wake of the war between Russia and Ukraine. Russia takes NATO's expansion as an existential threat. Britain's former Prime Minister Boris Johnson has visited Texas to meet 24 of the state's leading conservative figures, including politicians, to shore up support for the war in Ukraine. A growing number of conservative lawmakers, candidates, and activists are now questioning the size of the U.S. assistance for Kiev. The U.S. is now the biggest supplier of weapons to Ukraine.
Britain's former prime minister has made a controversial trip to the U.S. state of Texas to shore up support for Ukraine. The Center for European Policy Analysis, or the CEPA, a pro-Ukrainian think tank based in Washington, decided to enlist Johnson to push Republicans to support Ukraine. Pro-Ukraine think tankers brought Johnson to a private lunch in Dallas, Texas, to meet 24 of the state's leading conservative figures, including politicians, donors, and captains of the industry. Johnson's Dallas trip included a visit with former President George W. Bush, in which the two talked about the war in Ukraine. The former UK Prime Minister flew to Texas as a growing number of conservative lawmakers, candidates, and activists have started to question the size of the US support package for Ukraine. Johnson has been enlisted because he is said to have been very much seen as the architect of the Western policy on Ukraine. Johnson was a staunch backer of the West proxy war with Russia during his time in office. He also played a crucial role in ditching peace talks that was held in the early days of the conflict. In April 2022, then Prime Minister Johnson traveled to Kiev and urged Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to stop negotiating with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Moscow has warned that the weapons supplied to Ukraine will only prolong the war. Russia's former President Dmitry Medvedev has said the weapons will make the war more dangerous. Kremlin has also said the drive to supply weapons to Kiev will likely trigger what is commonly called as a nuclear apocalypse.
Johnson's visit to the U.S. comes amid the backdrop of rising tensions between Russia and Ukraine's Western supporters. Russia has warned that supplying more destructive and advanced weapons by the U.S. and its allies to Ukraine increases the probability of a nuclear apocalypse. Russia's former president Dmitry Medvedev, who is currently serving as deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council, has said that the more weapons are supplied, the more dangerous the world will be. Earlier this month, the United Kingdom announced during a summit of European leaders that it was working with the Netherlands to build a so-called international jet coalition to help Ukraine obtain F-16 fighter jets from its mostly Western allies. So apparently they believe that a nuclear conflict or a nuclear apocalypse is impossible because it is never possible. They are wrong. And at some point, events can go completely according to an unpredictable scenario. And the responsibility will lie entirely with the North Atlantic Alliance. Medvedev's warning came days after American President Joe Biden told fellow G7 leaders in Japan that he supported a joint effort with allies to train Ukrainian pilots on F-16 fighter jets. The U.S. has so far committed $48 billion in military aid and other assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the war. Washington is the biggest supplier of weaponry to the Ukrainian military. Meanwhile, Russia says it conducted an operation in the border city of Belgorod after Ukraine-based militants staged a sabotage raid there. Russia has said more than 70 attackers were killed in its operation to repel cross-border raiders who entered the country's Belgorod region.
On May 22nd, a unit of the Ukrainian Nationalist Formation invaded the territory of the Russian Federation in the area of the international checkpoint in the Belgorod region. In the course of the counter-terrorist operation, the Nationalist Formations were blocked and defeated by airstrikes, artillery fire, and the active actions of the Western Military District units covering the state border. The remaining Nationalists were driven back to the territory of Ukraine, where they were completely eliminated. More than 70 Ukrainian terrorists were eliminated, as well as machinery and armored vehicles.
Russia says the cross-border sabotage was aimed to divert attention away from Bakhmut and minimize Ukraine's losses in the eastern city, which Russian troops claim to have fully captured. The battle over the city has been described as the heaviest to take place between the Russian and Ukrainian forces since last February.
Official data shows the German economy is entering a recession as it contracted slightly in the first quarter of 2023. According to the study conducted by the country's Federal Statistics Agency, GDP fell by 0.3% between January and March. This follows a 0.5% contraction in the fourth quarter of 2022. The negative growth figure amid high inflation also reflected in the household consumption, which fell to over 1% this year. Dwindling energy supplies from Russia have pushed prices up, stoking inflation. Germany's iconic car industry has also shown a decline in its production line. The country has been the scene of strikes and demonstrations over soaring prices. And that is it for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Global debt grew by $8.3 trillion in the first quarter of 2023 to a near-record high of $305 trillion. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The National News wrote in this regard, global debt grew by $8.3 trillion in the first 3 months of 2023, prompting concerns over leverage in the financial system as the debt pile edges closer to record highs. At almost $305 trillion, global debt is a shade under the $306 trillion recorded in the first quarter of 2022, the Institute of International Finance said in its latest Global Debt Monitor report. The increase marks the second consecutive quarterly jump in global borrowing, following two quarters of sharp decline during rapid monetary policy tightening last year in countries around the world. The rebound was primarily driven by non-financial corporates and the government sector, as the central banks respond to fragile market sentiment by slowing the pace of rate hikes. IIF economists Emir Tiftik and Khadija Mahmoud and Raymond Aycock said. They added, global debt is now $45 trillion higher than its pre-pandemic level and is expected to continue increasing rapidly. Central banks around the world have eased the pace of increases in their benchmark policy rates that were raised to curb inflation. The U.S. Federal Reserve, which has been increasing its benchmark rates aggressively since March last year, by as much as 75 basis points, raised it by only 25 basis points in May. It may pause rate increases as it edges closer to their highest level since 2007, shortly before the start of 2008 global financial crisis. The rise in interest rates makes borrowing in U.S. dollars more expensive for governments, corporations and financial institutions, as well as household borrowers. RT also noted the global debt pile increased by $8.3 trillion in the first quarter of the year to a near record high of $305 trillion amid an aggressive tightening of monetary policy by central banks. According to its Global Debt Monitor report, the reading is the highest since the first quarter of last year and the second highest quarterly reading ever. The IIF warned that the combination of such high debt levels and rising interest rates had pushed up the cost of servicing that debt, prompting concerns about leverage in the financial system. The IIF said, with financial conditions at their most restrictive levels since 2008 to 2009 financial crisis, a credit crunch would prompt higher default rates and result in more zombie firms, already approaching an estimated 14% of U.S.-listed firms. Despite concerns over a potential credit crunch following recent turmoil in the banking sectors of the United States and Switzerland, government borrowing needs to remain elevated, the finance industry body stressed. According to the report, aging populations and rising healthcare costs continue putting a strain on government balance sheets, while heightened geopolitical tensions are also expected to drive further increases in national defense spending over the medium term, which would potentially affect the credit profile of both governments and corporate borrowers. The IIF cautioned, if this trend continues, it will have significant implications for international debt markets, particularly if any interest rates remain higher for longer. The report showed that total debt in emerging markets hit a new record high of more than $100 trillion, around 250% of GDP, up from $75 trillion in 2019. China, Mexico, Brazil, India, and Turkey were the biggest upward contributors, according to IIF. As for the developed markets, Japan, the US, France, and the UK posted the sharpest increases over the quarter, it said. Meanwhile, news reports show that Italy's sovereign debt has continued to soar, jumping by 17.8 billion euros in March in monthly terms to hit a record high of 2.79 trillion euros, according to the country's central bank. The previous all-time high was reached in February when debt amounted to 2.78 trillion euros. The Bank of Italy said recently that the surge was driven by an increase in the public sector's borrowing requirement of 31.3 billion euros, which was partially offset by a reduction in the Treasury's liquid assets to 29.4 billion euros. New historic record. A worrying and alarming exponential rise given the rate hikes due to the ECB's new restrictive monetary policy, stated Massimiliano Dona, president of the National Consumer Union. According to Dona, if the government debt was divided among the Italian population, it would amount to 47,405 euros per citizen or 106,446 euros per household. Dona warned, now planning to reduce taxes for everyone with the flat tax means either making fun of the Italians, recovering what you give with the rates with deductions and charges, or getting the country into trouble. Adding, for this reason, the government would do well, for the moment, to limit itself to limiting electricity and gas bills, restoring discounts on system charges in the bill. Soaring energy prices have exacerbated the cost of living crisis in the EU's third largest economy and have pushed up the level of public debt, which amounted to 144% of GDP between October and December 2022, according to the latest data from the Eurostat. Italian officials have lashed out at the European Central Bank over its monetary policy, claiming that rate hikes aimed at taming inflation have piled more financial pressure on one of Eurozone's most indebted countries. The ECB once again increased rates recently, hiking them to 3.25% in an attempt to curb double-digit inflation across the Eurozone.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. it's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
Begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We have been discussing the advice that our beloved Prophet had given to our first Imam alayhi salam. He says, وَالثَّالِثَ الْخَوْفُ مِنَ اللَّهِ عَزَّ ذِكْرُهُ كَأَنَّكَ تَرَاهُ. He says, the third is to fear, have khawf of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the type of khawf as if you see Him. You know, the fact is that a person, no matter how evil that person is, how depraved that person is, would not act the same way in front of people that they would in private. Yeah? Like, you know, like if a person, like if there's a security guard standing right there, most people wouldn't steal, but they would steal when there's nobody watching, right? If we knew there was cameras in here, none of you would like pick your nose or something, you know what I mean? Because you know there's a camera watching you, right? And so when we know that someone is watching us, we wouldn't act in that same way. If we can get to the point where we can literally see and experience that God is watching us, it would change the way you and I function. Completely change the way you and I function, right? And that's something that we have to develop. There's a really cool hadith from, again, our sixth Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Where he says, Khafillah, fear Allah ka'annaka tarah, like you see Him. Fear God as though you can see Him. Wa in kunta la tarahu fa innahu yaraka. But even though you may not see Him, know that He sees you. Yeah? Know that He sees you. And He doesn't stop there. He says, وَإِن كُنْتَ تَرَى أَنَّهُ لَا يَرَاكَ فَقَدْ كَفَرْتَ. That if you actually think that He cannot see you, then you have done kufr. You have disbelieved in Allah, because Allah sees everything, right? Like we have this story that I know we all have heard from the time we were at madrasa, right? Like there was a teacher who told the students, do something. I don't know what it was. I don't know what the act was, but do something where no one will see you. So one student came back and said, I hid under a table. One student said, I hid into my closet, right? And they did all of this. And one student came back and he said, I couldn't. And he says, why? Why couldn't? He said, because God was watching me everywhere, right? And that student was me. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah? But that's the reality, right? Like the reality is that God sees us at all times. And that's something that we always have to be mindful of. And if we ever believe that in this particular moment, God is not seeing me, فَقَدْ كَفَرْتَ, the Imam says. You have done kufr, you have disbelieved. But then he says, وَإِن كُنْتَ تَعْلَمْ أَنَّهُ يَرَاكْ. That if you know and you are certain that God sees you, ثُمَّ بَرَزْتَ لَهُ بِالْمَعْصِيَةِ, and then you still have the guts to sin against Allah after you know that God sees you, فَقَدْ جَعَلْتَهُ مِنْ أَهْوَنِ النَّاذِرِ بَيْنَ إِلَيْكَ. That you have made God the most insignificant of lookers. Yeah? The most insignificant of people who see things. Imagine how that is. If I know, guaranteed, Allah is watching me, and yet I have the ability to sin, what does that tell me or you about what I think of God? I think He's insignificant. Who cares if you see me? I'm still going to do this. And that is scary, yeah? That is scary. That's a demonstration that our faith needs a lot of work. Yeah, a lot of work to then get to that point. And so we start. How do we fear God? We fear God the type of fearing that is if He sees me. All we need are reminders for this. Because we have from the time we are children been taught that God sees everything. That God hears everything. Innahu Sami'ul Basir. We are constantly reminded that indeed He is all hearing, all seeing. The problem that we get into is that the moment I want to sin, I forget that God is watching me at that point. Because if I truly remembered at that point, I don't think most of us would sin. I don't think we have that kind of guts. I say the same thing about Fajr, you know. That at Fajr time, If I just pick up the habit or get into the habit to say that God is waiting for you, God is waiting for you, none of us will snooze at that point. None of us. Because what we don't, I don't think we have that kind of guts to snooze. And we know, the problem is we forget at the time of Fajr because our sleep has taken over. Or when our desires have taken over, we forget that God is watching. We just have to find reminders, right? And that's up to us to find that reminder. I think, like, create your own alarm that comes out. God is watching, right? God is waiting, whatever. Like, if you can do something like that, I'm sure you can create your own alarms, right? Or if you know, for example, your vice or my vice is to, we watch inappropriate things on the laptop, then have like a big eye on your laptop. Every time you open it, you see this eye as a reminder. These are just examples, yeah? But you have to find your own example to remind you that God is watching. Because I promise you, if you can remind yourself that God is watching, we wouldn't sin, right? And that's the level of faith that we need to have. If we have that level of faith, then that secondary khawf of being distant from God will become much easier to reach if I have the first level of khawf in my life. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Ma salli ala Muhammadin wa Ali Muhammad. Then we come to the fourth advice. Warabi'a, kasratul buka min khashyatillah. Yeah? To cry frequently or to cry a lot out of the khashya of Allah. Now again, like most translations will translate khashya as fear as well. We translated khawf as fear. Both words can't really mean fear. They both may produce fear, right? Khashya is more of being in awe, yeah, of humility. A humility of such sorts that I fear doing something to ruin that relationship with God because I respect Him so much. So it's a different type of fear, but we'll discuss that. But then the Prophet says that kathratul buka min khashyatillah. A lot of tears out of the fear of God or being in awe of Allah. Yubna laka bi kulli dam'atin alfa baytin fil jannah. Subhanallah. That Allah will build for you, for every tear, 1,000 homes in paradise. Yeah? This is not a small thing. Yeah? Not a small thing. Now what will we do with 1,000 mansions? Allahu a'lam. Yeah? But the fact is that I would get Jannah. Right? But I think more than the reward of the 1,000 mansions is the value of that one tear. Imagine how powerful that one tear for God is. Right? Now here, what's the difference between khawf and khashya? Right? As we said, khawf is translated as fear, khashya is translated as fear. But what's the difference, right? The difference is, according to linguists and ulama here, they tell us that khawf is generally a type of fear over something where we don't have full knowledge about it. Okay? So for example, I don't have full knowledge about the Day of Judgment. I have general knowledge, so I fear the Day of Judgment. I don't have full knowledge of the effects of my actions, and so I fear these actions. I don't have full extent knowledge of the wrath of God, so I fear the wrath of God. So any time that I lack the full knowledge behind something, I would automatically fear that, right? This is true for anything, whether you play sports, whether you do something, the fear, you don't really fear your opponent, but the time you fear your opponent is when you can't figure him out or her out, right? And there's something strange about that person. Khashya is a fear that is attained after knowledge. When you gain knowledge about something and you say that that being deserves respect, that being deserves awe, then it automatically creates a feeling of humility and respect for that being where you fear ruining that relationship. This is why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-Fatir says in verse 28, إِنَّمَا يَخْشَ اللَّهَ مِنْ إِبَادِهِ الْعُلَمَاء أحسنت. That the only ones who truly have khashya of God are the ulama. Right? Are the ulama. Now ulama doesn't mean scholars as such. It means those who have knowledge. The more knowledge you have of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the more you will be produced, or the more inclined you would be to have this khushu, this being in awe of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
I've been waiting, I've been hurting, 'cause I've been falling, I need your help. My heart is breaking, so tired of crying. Lord, I'm calling, I need your help. Astaghfirullah. Forgive me, Allah.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new study quantifies fossil fuel companies' impact on Western wildfires. The study, published in the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Research Letters, is the first to quantify how corporate emissions have made wildfires worse. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Throughout road in this regard, the American West has always had forest fires, just not like this. Blazes are spreading further and burning longer, incinerating towns and exposing millions of people to noxious smoke, while a century of fire suppression and other land management choices contribute to the severity. Climate change is a key factor fueling these fires, roughly doubling the acreage burnt over the last 40 years. A new study takes this connection one step further, making the case that a significant chunk of burnt forest, nearly 20 million acres, can be traced back to major fossil fuel companies. The study, published in the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Research Letters recently, is the first to quantify how corporate emissions have made wildfires worse. Experts say the new research could help advance growing efforts to take polluters to court. Carly Phillips, a co-author of the new study and a research scientist at the Science Hub for Climate Litigation at the Union of Concerned Scientists, said, "These companies should be held accountable for their fair share of the damages that they have caused. They lied and engaged in this orchestrated campaign of deception for years, and it didn't have to be this way, right?" Researchers from the Union of Concerned Scientists and the University of California, Merced, found that 37% of forests burnt across the western United States and southwestern Canada since 1986 can be linked to carbon pollution from 88 of the world's largest oil, gas, and coal companies. That group includes Chevron, ExxonMobil, BP, and Shell, state-owned oil producers like Saudi Aramco and Gazprom, and cement manufacturers. Researchers considered emissions directly emitted by these companies' operations as well as the indirect emissions from the products they sold. Since 2017, cities and states have filed around 20 lawsuits against fossil fuel companies based on state laws that prohibit deceptive advertising seeking money to adapt to the effects of climate change. The suits were set in motion by investigations showing that Exxon, Shell, and coal companies had known about the dangers of skyrocketing carbon emissions for decades, but publicly downplayed the threat. After years of delays, the Supreme Court declined to get involved in these cases last month, clearing the way for them to proceed potentially to jury trials. This study comes as spring fires scorched western Canada during an unusually hot and dry spring, with about 1 million acres burning across the province of Alberta. An early heat wave pushed temperatures above 90 degrees in parts of the typically temperate Pacific Northwest, with Seattle and Portland breaking heat records at least 3 days in a row. The same heat dome is expected to fan the flames of nearly 90 fires burning across Alberta. It's hard to draw a direct line between global warming and wildfires, but recent advances in attribution science, the field that identifies climate change's role in heat waves, droughts, rising seas, and other phenomena, have made it possible to quantify its effect on fires. The new study relies on a key risk factor called the vapor pressure deficit, a measure of how thirsty the atmosphere is. Hotter temperatures cause moisture to be pulled out of vegetation, turning forests into tinderboxes just waiting for a spark. To figure out how companies' emissions contributed to fire danger conditions in the West, researchers built on a previous study that linked emissions from 88 big fossil fuel producers to rising temperatures. Then they compared two models of how dry forests would be under different climate scenarios, one modeled on the real world and the other excluding the emissions associated with the 88 companies. The major contribution of this study is to connect all of the dots between specific sources of human-related carbon emissions and recent increases in forest fire activity, said Philip Higora, a professor of fire ecology at the University of Montana who was not involved in the study. Most of the links have been well known for a long time, but this is the first study to connect the dots quantitatively. Exxon and BP did not respond to Grice's request to comment in time for publication. Jessica Wentz, a fellow at Columbia University's Sabin Center for Climate Change Law, thought the findings could be used to support existing lawsuits or provide the impetus for other local governments or to file their own. Wentz said the research might be relevant to a case in Colorado, where the city and county of Boulder, along with San Miguel County, sued Sunker Energy and ExxonMobil, seeking millions of dollars to update their infrastructure to withstand climate change. Wen said, "That's the one lawsuit where wildfire-related damages are forefront and central. Translating the research to a specific court case could prove thorny, though. The study looked at a large region, the whole North American West, and the aggregate of 88 companies' emissions. It's possible that attorneys could use the new research to calculate wildfire risk over a smaller area, say Boulder County, but it would require some extrapolation. For calculating damages, a court might want to see a more fine-grained analysis," Wen said. "It's really a totally open question of how courts will look at the evidence and just how granular will plaintiffs need to be in terms of providing scientific data to support their claims. We just don't know yet," he said. In a way, the long delays in these climate court cases have actually given some ammunition to cities and states looking to hold fossil fuel companies accountable. The extra time has allowed the science of climate attribution to mature, so that if these cases end up going to trials, cities and states have more evidence to support their case. It's a sort of weird silver lining, Wen said.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world. The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18th, 2023.
Another example about trying to make us pessimistic about ourselves
is the existence of all kinds of malicious media outlets that insist on proving that the Iranian nation has turned away from religious beliefs and that it has turned away from revolutionary sentiments. They insist on this. They say this over and over again. And they have some followers here who say the same thing. They repeat in the social media, in newspapers, and in various discussions that people have turned away from religion. Well, they repeat this. If a person is negligent and not thinking, he or she will accept and believe in this. But suddenly you see that the Qadr night arrives and this year's gatherings are more energetic than last year. Besieging God, crying, imploring Him, as well as the presence of young people and their tears and these gatherings were more than last year's. Quds Day arrives and it's more crowded than last year. The 22nd of Bahman arrives and the crowd is double that of last year. This means that the opposite of what they say is true, but they tempt others.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I said from the Quran, against the evil of the temptations of the Satans, who whisper into the hearts of human beings from among the jinn and human beings. Chapter 114, verse 6. The human beings who are referred to here are these people. They are always tempting others. As another example, imagine a few investors and entrepreneurs leave the country with their money and move to another country. Some people say, see, why do you have hope that you can carry out any kind of economic activity here? They are leaving. Well, yes, if there are four people leaving, there are another 40 people staying and running their businesses. There are thousands of knowledge-based companies being created that are employing our youth. This is the truth of our society, but the enemies try their best to eliminate everyone's hope. This is the enemy's strategy. So keep in mind that the enemy's plan today is to cause us lose hope in ourselves. They want us to lose hope in ourselves, lose hope in the government, lose hope in student environments, and to lose hope in our people. But no, the country is making progress, and it is progressing well.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.